Hello, everybody, and thank you for tuning in to the Liberty Report. With me today is Daniel McAdams. Daniel, nice to see you.
Good morning, Dr. Paul.
Very good. There's a war going on in the Middle East. It's been going on for a good many years now. But it looks to me like it may be escalating in the Syrian area. I mean, it could escalate in many other places, but right today we want to talk about what's going on in Syria, because what's in the news is there's this declaration that Trump is now going to arm the Kurds. Of course, he's already armed the Kurds to some degree because he followed along with Obama. Obama had a certain position, and like we argued, things don't really change. So it's a continuation of a policy of mismanagement. And sometimes they mismanage in a similar manner, and sometimes they are creative in their mismanagement. But this is more interference. And the headline in the New York Times was, Trump to arm Syrian Kurds, even as Turkey strongly objects. And that's the issue. We had a program last week that we got a lot of attention on because what we were talking about was the fact that the Turks bomb the Kurds. And they don't get along real well. And the Turks would like to get a piece of, the Kurds would like to get a piece of Turkey. And so they're involved in this fight against Syria that we helped create, and that mess that exists there. So it is pretty important, but the dilemma, which we pointed out, was a consequence of a deeply flawed interventionist foreign policy and a flip-flop foreign policy. And Trump's pretty good at flip-flopping, because just the other day I was complimenting him for at least wanting to talk to Lavrov and come up with working out a peace agreement and safe zones in Syria. But nevertheless, now we're putting more arms into the hands of the Kurds. And that raises more questions that we'll talk about, raises a lot of questions. But the reaction from the Turks has been rather explicit because their interests have been challenged, which means that the whole idea of our close relationship with Turkey is challenged. It challenges the whole principle of NATO and a lot of different things. And it's around the subject of Raqqa, you know, the symbolic but capital for ISIS. And to me, and one of the questions I'd like you to address or clarify, is this a sign of weakness of our policy and desperation that we really have to get these Kurds doing some serious fighting? Or is this a sign that this is the final battle and ISIS will be licked and they'll take over Raqqa and Mosul also at the same time, and then there'll be a great victory for Trump getting rid of ISIS?
Well, I do think that's a pipe dream because, as you point out, it is Obama's policy. Obama had armed the Kurds as part of the SDF, Syrian Democratic Forces. The Kurdish YPG is the majority party in that group that's backed by the U.S. But Turkish President Erdogan, as you point out, is furious. The Turks said that the U.S. is in bed with terrorists if it arms the Kurds. It's not a good way to open a coming trip to Washington because Erdogan is going to be in Washington next week. So being a fly on the wall at that meeting might be interesting.
Well, sometimes this is so serious and sometimes it's silly and funny. But you can't help but trying to point out how silly the whole thing is. And one is the reassurance. Our government is wanting to reassure Turkey. Oh, yeah, we understand your concern. We understand this. But we also like the Kurds. And we want the Kurds to fight ISIS. And the Kurds have their own interests. But this whole idea and the fear built up, or what the Turks are expressing, is, hey, you know, the Kurds that we're giving the weapons to sort of might be close to the PKK, and we put them on our list of the bad guys. And what happens if the weapons we send over there get into their hand? So the reassurances come from our administration. We will monitor it. We are going to check it. We will limit the amount of bullets they get. And then when the war's over, we're going to take their weapons back. And I got to thinking, who's going to believe that baloney? You know, and how often have our weapons that the American people paid for, got in the hands of the people who eventually try to kill us. Just think how recently the weapons in Libya just disappeared, and a bunch of them end up on the opposite side of our forces in Syria. Yeah. So this to me has to be one of the silliest thing of reassurance that we'll keep an eye on all these big guns we're going to give you and these bullets and all that. That's so far outrageous that it is silly.
And they've done it over and over. I mean, the last say 2 or 3 years that the U.S. has been, probably more than that, arming the rebel groups in Syria. You know, it's well documented, even though they have these safeguards in place, that these weapons have gone to Al-Qaeda, they've gone to ISIS. Mm-hmm. Our own weapons are being used to fight against the people that we're fighting on, supporting on the other side. So I don't see how doing the same thing is going to change the fact that these weapons are going to get in the hands of the terrorists.
You know, the Turks, they're still our ally, and they offered to help us, maybe even send troops in. But we declined because we thought that they wouldn't be strong enough against ISIS, and they might just concentrate on going after the Kurds, which is a realistic thing. But it really points out, the mess that's over there. But it also invites a discussion about proxy armies. Are they really successful? Can we always say, well, we're going to support the Kurds to do the groundwork? And there's always been an old saying, if you want to, win over and occupy and control a country, you got to have boots on the ground. You have to have the troops. But that's not popular with Americans. Americans are content, a little intervention here. Besides, it's, Assad, they've been more or less convinced over the years mm-hmm. of propaganda. He has to be a really bad guy. He gassed his own people. That sort of propaganda and nonsense. So I just really wonder whether proxy armies really work out that well.
You have to wonder what's in it for the Kurds, because the U.S., this week reassured everyone that as soon as the Kurds take, as a matter of fact, we do have a map that we can show of the Kurdish areas. Okay. But the U.S., the Pentagon assured that when the Turks, or when the Kurds finally take Raqqa, and Raqqa is just below Al-Hasaka, it's outside of the Kurdish inhabited area. So the U.S. says as soon as they fight and shed blood to take Raqqa back, well, they'll go home. Don't worry about it. They're going to leave.
Yeah.
So what's in it for them? Why would they fight and die and then just go home? What, do they get a thank you or something?
Yeah, but I think the U.S. is arguing, well, we're not going to really expose them to the tough fighting, and the Syrian army is going to do that, Free Syrian Army. But how that is accomplished. But that map, I think, is interesting, not only because you point out that the city that they're getting ready to attack, or the ongoing battle is existing, is the number of countries that are involved. I mean, it isn't a simple matter. I mean, we have Turkey and Syria and Iran and Iraq, all these countries, and we have Kurdistan. It's just the total rejection of outside interference in people's business, this whole idea that there's no belief in self-determination. Obviously, how can these lines be drawn so discreetly, and show where the Kurds live? Well, why don't they get together and say, well, why don't we give them a homeland? Mm-hmm. But, there's always too much involved. It is that the concern for people having a homeland and devising a culture that they want, even if they're willing to work in association. The principle of a true republic is that groups can come together very loosely. The founders had that dream, and tried. Of course, it didn't work. There's always this temptation to have a strong central government. The politicians always yield to the temptation of using force to devise and to orchestrate a system that they think is best for the people. So the self-determination issue is never accepted. And when you think of that mess to settle that problem, it just keeps getting worse and worse because of outside forces. And I would say our policies under Obama, we had to get rid of Assad, joined in by Saudi Arabia and Israel. They all went along with this. And then the legitimate government at the time, even though people condemned the government of Assad, they tried to preserve the integrity of the country. And so they invite their allies to help them, and they become the monsters, and not the people that went in there and really stirred the pot and decided a revolution is necessary and Assad had to go. So it's generally this principle of interference, and of course, the most dangerous interferers are the ones who can actually represent an empire. The empire people, they're powerful. The Roman Empire, you know, whatever empire you have. And we are the empire. So we have the money and we have the goods and we have the wealth and we have the weapons. So therefore, the insecure individuals who can't understand a little bit of self-assurance, they have to throw their weight around, you know. Oh, we're always going to be attacked. And the Russians are coming. North Korea is about to attack us. Because that is the only way you can get the people frightened enough to support the empire. And maybe because there's so much more of this activity in the last 15 years, maybe that's a sign, which we have talked about, the erosion of really the principle and the support behind our empire, because quite frankly, I've said it, I think it's on its last legs, financial reasons, and just because the ideas are failing.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, talk about autonomy and carving out. I think Assad has offered the Kurds some autonomy in their regions in exchange for not fighting the government forces. But, of course, that makes the Turks even more nervous because it suggests statehood and it stirs it up. But, you know, we titled the show A Dangerous Idea about the Arming of the Serbs, the Kurds. And I think the dangerous part really is, okay, we know just a few days ago or a couple weeks ago, Turkey attacked YPG Kurdish forces in Syria and Iraq. They killed 20 of them. So what happens if, as President Trump signed on Monday, the Pentagon is allowed to give them heavy weapons to fight against ISIS? So what if the Turks decide they want to attack the Kurds again, and the Kurds turn some heavy weapons, maybe shoot down an F-16 or something, or blow up a couple of Turkish tanks with American weapon? Talk about a dangerous situation.
Boy, you know, that is for sure. And some of those events are unpredictable, and you just have to postulate. But certainly giving these extra arms to one side in such a messy situation, it's okay, we'll keep an eye on them. We have an inventory of the weapons, and they have to get permission from us before they shoot their bullets. You know, it is so ridiculous, and I think that it is very, very dangerous, and this is not a movement to more peace. Obviously, at one time, you know, that I sort of expressed a little bit of hope that maybe Trump's back talking with them before, but Trump is very adamant. He says, we are not, last week it was a positive, we're not going to add any more sanctions on Russia. Mm-hmm. This week, we're going to keep them on there until you admit that you stole, Crimea, and give it back to Ukraine. And that's such a gross distortion of the coup that we participated in and caused that mess over there. But it's a long struggle. But right now, peace is not going to break out soon.
And even the rationale of beefing up the Kurds in the eastern part of Syria, I think, is pretty flimsy. The U.S., the Pentagon said, the SDF, which is mostly Kurdish, is, quote, the only force that can successfully seize Raqqa in the near future. I don't think that's the case. I think that the Syrians with the Russians and Iranians are doing a pretty good job in the West. I think that the de-escalation zones have really put a fine point on who is a terrorist and who isn't, and it'll make it easier for those to be eliminated. And after that's done, they can turn their sights to eastern Syria, which is largely a desert anyway. So it's not like there's a rush. They can go ahead and do it. I think it's just an excuse to keep the U.S. there, to keep our boots on the ground that are there illegally.
Now, back to my theoretical question at the beginning was, do you see this as a sign that, you know, they're on the verge of victory? And they want to just conclude it and give it a little extra weapons and go in there and take care of ISIS? Or is this a sign that they're not doing well? Because in many ways, we had a setback from their view. Our government's viewpoint is that the safe zones, is something that we can't yell and scream about because we were for them once, but now the Russians have done it. And so I don't know. I would think probably it's a sign of weakness, because if the current policy was working, they're not going to go. Why would they go and aggravate Turkey even more so right now? So yeah. I think that uh, I think our side is getting more desperate because the Russians seem to be, handling it. They did more to fight ISIS than we have, and they have done more to talk about peace and have safe zones. So that's sort of where I come down on that.
Yeah, I think what it is really is a last-ditch effort to partition Syria. I think that's always been the goal of the U.S. And as I've said so many times, what will happen when the U.S.-backed forces take Raqqa? The U.S. said that, don't worry, the Kurds are going to leave once they take it, and we're going to give it to Syrian Arabs. Well, which ones? The opposition? If you hand eastern Syria to the opposition, to the anti-Assad opposition, the U.S. has essentially sanctioned the partition of Syria between an east and a west. That was the goal all along, and I think this is a ramping up. They've realized that they've lost the west. They can't do anything about it, I don't think. And this is their last-ditch effort to partition.
Yeah, they work on the assumption, well, if we get Raqqa and Mosul as well, and we get the bad guys out, then ISIS will be destroyed. For some reason, I don't quite believe that. It's sort of like their argument in Afghanistan. We need 5,000-10,000 more troops in there to have victory over the Taliban.
That'll do it.
If they understood the Taliban, they're not going to have a victory over the Taliban. But that's Trump's position. We have to defeat the Taliban, and they do this as if we kill a few more, and then there's a big announcement when they kill a leader, whether it's Al Qaeda or ISIS or whatever, that magically we've reached this point where victory is at our doorstep. It just might mean they're shifting gears a little bit. It's not like the atmosphere is so different than the atmosphere of World War II. We can debate all World War I and World War II, but the attitude was different. Germany declared war against us, Japan bombed us. There was a precise definition, there was a goal, and in three and a half years, I mean, just think of what happened. And here we're, 17 years into being over there. Matter of fact, you could argue 27 years, because I think getting involved in 1991 was a big issue when we assumed that we would turn on an old ally and we were going to protect, put everything on defending Saudi Arabia, and we have to become even more anti-Iranian, that sort of thing. So we've set those goals, but I just don't think that even if they have some technical victories here, I think they cannot refuse to see the point that when a country like ours goes in and dictates that we are going to make you good Democrats, and you will do as we tell you, and you will have elections, and you better elect
the
people we nominate and put in there, or we will have another election with a gun. It's a shame. So what do you think on this? How would you summarize this mess?
My summation really is an endless loop that we do over and over, and that is you cannot have different results from the same policy. Trump is following Obama's policies, which did not work. That means Trump's policies are not going to work.
Yeah, and Daniel, you make a good point about it being on this specific matter, and I could generalize on that. In general, foreign interventionism by any country is not a good position, even though empires get away with it for long periods of time, but eventually they fail. They fail because they overextend overseas. That's what happened to the Roman Empire. That's what happened to the Soviet system. It collapses because overextension, and they usually collapse because the economy collapses. And right now, we're on the verge of that, and there's no sign that the Republicans or Democrats will say, hey, maybe our foreign policy is different. Like we've already pointed out, this is Obama's policy. He's the one that started this. He's the one that really charged people up. So there's a higher authority, politically speaking, who controls our foreign policy and our monetary policy, our spending policies. And of course, many had been hopeful, that the new administration would change. And there's moments when I keep being hopeful and want to be hopeful that you hear a couple comments. But ultimately, it looks like we're sticking to the guns of the interventionist, of policy that has failed so often. It's sort of like the obsession with sticking with interventionist economic policy, Keynesianism, the inflationism of central banks. It totally failed, but they, you know, figure, well, we don't have an option. We can't just surrender and come home. And we can't just say, well, we have to quit this spending, because a lot of people become locked in and addicted to this type of government. So my goal is to get more people to understand why the goals that the founders set, and unfortunately we have not achieved, is to look for a definition of what the goal of the government ought to be in a free society, and that is to protect liberty. And people can take care of themselves. Not perfectly. There are too many people that are imperfect. We're all imperfect, and there's always some evil out there. But once we accept the notion that evil people can grab the powerful hands of government, then that evil is magnified. In a free society, evil will be dealt with in a different manner, not by allowing the people who are evil to get control of our government. And unfortunately, whether it's evil or just stupidity or bad ideas, one way or the other, super-sized governments and authoritarianism and this pretense and this assumption that people know what's best for other people, that is what has to be repealed. And I think this is where we're making progress. People are tired of this. The failure of the economic system and our foreign policy is on our doorstep. And we have to be able to, in a positive way, present the alternative to the system that we have today. That's where I'm optimistic. I believe we are making progress. I want to thank everybody for tuning in today to the Liberty Report. Please come back soon.